Ngā mihi nui and welcome. From Radio New Zealand National, here's Our Changing World.
Finally on Our Changing World tonight, art meets astronomy in Dark Sky.
Dark Sky, an exhibition at Wellington's Adam Art Gallery, explores how photography has been used to capture the skies and to shape our ideas of space.
The show coincides with the upcoming transit of Venus early next month, and curators Jeffrey Batchen and Tina Barton take Veronica on a guided tour of the hot planet and the universe.
What you're listening to now is Venusian wind. This is a sound piece that has been actually installed in the gallery's lift. It's been made by artist Stella Brennan with her collaborator Ian Wally. What they have done is actually gather information that the Soviet space program accumulated through the various missions they took actually to Venus. They had a number of probes that actually landed on the surface of Venus, which of course is an extremely inhospitable place. What Stella has done subsequently is reconstruct those sounds from the data that has survived to create a soundscape of what we might be able to hear should humans possibly be able to exist for any length of time on Venus. So there's the sound of wind, volcanic eruptions, earthquakes, and that slight sort of crackly sound is actually probably the rattle of the probe itself that would have been taking the recordings. So they've tried to reconstruct exactly what the probe itself heard.
The exhibition was, of course, inspired by the upcoming transit of Venus, but when Tina and I discussed the prospects of doing an exhibition on that theme, we thought it would be best to widen it somewhat. So we do have some work in the exhibition specifically about the transit, but we opened it up to artists, particularly artists who use photography to look at and depict the sky.
What you'll find as you walk in is quite a substantial installation by German contemporary artist Wolfgang Tillmann. I saw one configuration of this work at the Venice Biennale in 2009, and I remember being really struck then by his curiosity and interest in astronomy, but also the connection with our own history in terms of the place of the transit of Venus in the foundational narratives about the discovery of New Zealand. And I immediately thought it would be fantastic to have that work seen here. As it transpired, we've been able to bring that work, and the artist has been intimately involved in representing it specifically for the Adam Art Gallery, and then to combine it with Jeff's interests in some earlier images. This sort of play between an artist working in 1874 to capture the transit and an artist working in 2004 to also capture the transit is a kind of way of framing the whole exhibition. Tillmann, actually, although he's best known as a contemporary artist and one of the leading photographers of the day, was actually and is actually an amateur astronomer. He loved it as a boy. In fact, he used his childhood telescope to actually take the photographs in 2004. And so what we have is an amazing array of his photographs of the actual transit mixed together with a kind of assemblage of images drawn from different sources that really play on our attitudes towards space.
Which sort of brings me to the next gallery. If we walk down here, this is all focused on the moon, and would it be perhaps fair enough to say that our first opening up to imagery from the sky was our own moon?
Historically, we've always been obsessed with the moon. Daguerre invented the daguerreotype in 1839, and in the first month of its existence, he tried to photograph the moon. So it seems, as far as photography is concerned, that it's been a long-term obsession.
Interesting, though, the transit of Venus, of course, engages the sun. And I think there's an even older history when it comes to photography, isn't there, of the sun being thought of as the generating force behind the photograph. So there's a lovely way in which astronomy and photography come together through the actions of the sun, which, of course, emits light, which is the essential ingredient for any image.
In this gallery devoted to photographs of the moon, we have a variety of kinds of work. We have a number of photographs shot through telescopes here on Earth, some of them borrowed from the Carter Observatory here in Wellington, but sent to them from American observatories. So a sense in which a kind of global photographic mapping of the moon, allowing a widespread conversation between the professional astronomers. But with that kind of photograph, we also have a number of vernacular commercial, so-called real photo postcards, both some of them issued by observatories and some of them photographed by photographers in state fairs and in itinerant studios, in which we see people sitting on a paper or wooden moon against a painted backdrop. These photographs were made between about 1902 and the latest one we have is from 1949, and it suggests that well before it was actually possible, people are already imagining journeying to the moon or travelling through outer space. We see a very kind of whimsical and almost homemade sense of people thinking about space travel well before it's actually technically possible. And then finally we have in the gallery some what I think actually for me are the most fascinating images in the whole show, photographs made by spacecraft sent by both the Soviet and American space missions up to photograph the moon up close and then sent back to us on Earth via radio signals. So they often consist of mosaics made up of strips of data that's been sent back by these spacecraft that have then been reassembled here on Earth, turned into photographic images, and then sent out to newspapers as publicity photographs, for example, of the NASA space mission, via the electric telegraph. So in effect, these are photographs that have been digitized twice over. And the end result are often very abstract images in which the surface of the moon almost looks like a pimply skin with all of these pockmarks from media strikes and so on, that have then been mapped with grids and other kinds of overlays by NASA to try and make sense of exactly what we're looking at. One of my favorite of these images was from 1964. The earlier NASA spacecraft were actually designed to crash land on the surface of the moon itself, and so they would transmit back this data until they crashed. And in this photograph, we see a kind of the surface of the moon, rather abstract, and then suddenly a straight line and nothing but what in effect is static, because the spacecraft has now hit the surface of the moon, and what we're seeing here is kind of white noise, the absence of signal, you might say. So it's a very odd photograph, all in all.
One of the pleasures of hanging this particular space was taking people on a journey from looking at the moon from afar and then gradually getting closer and closer until that absolutely critical moment when human beings stood on the surface of the moon for the very first time. We've got some memorabilia from that particular moment, including three issues of Life magazine that track the actual flight with the astronauts going up there and then placing the American flag on the surface of the moon. But we've also got the souvenir booklet that the New Zealand Herald published called Footprints on the Moon, that I actually remember as a child acquiring as a kind of memento of that incredibly important moment.
We're in the bottom gallery now, and this is where perhaps the largest bodies of work have been installed. One set of work by an American-born Australian artist, David Stevenson, who works in Hobart, on one side, and on the other side, an American artist named Trevor Paglen, and at the far end of the room, a German artist named Thomas Ruff, all of them showing different aspects of the night sky. Let's start with the Trevor Paglen works. Paglen's an interesting artist who works with the question of surveillance. In this case, he's allied himself with the Loose Association of Amateur Astronomers, and using special software, they have tracked American military and surveillance satellites through the night skies and photographed them. So it's a reminder that there's about 500,000 bits of space junk up there in the sky at the moment. We're despoiling the night sky just as we've despoiled our own planet. Some of those satellites are, of course, used to survey us, so this is an opportunity for the surveyed to turn the tables and survey the surveyors. So we have these very large photographs showing often streaks through the otherwise starlit sky, which are the tracks of these satellites moving overhead.
Here I think there's a fantastic traffic between a scientific approach where Paglen has really had to learn how to understand what's going on in the skies and use very advanced equipment to capture it, But then the aim has been to create these quite captivating images which work, if you like, as kind of abstract fields of line on dark ground. So they operate on two registers, both as actual records of these things that are tracking through the sky, but also as compositions that have their own veracity as things to look at.
David Stevenson, we have examples from two bodies of work here. One, somewhat similarly to the Paglen work, tracks stars, in fact allows stars to draw their own images on a photographic film. He basically points his camera up to the sky using very long exposure times, and then every so often he moves his camera in a 45 or 90 degree angle. And as a result, we get these rather beautiful, aesthetically beautiful images in which the stars have made little lines or points of light and create these complex geometric patterns. In another series, when he was a resident in Western Australia, he photographed dusk, so that we get these rather beautiful vertical images from the earth up into a very violet sky with just a hint of the moon hanging in the sky. I think of these images as being, as we tend to when we think about dusk, we think about the end of the day, but also often the end of an era, even the imminence of death. In some ways, these photographs conjure up all of the cultural and symbolic associations we have with images of the night sky.
Which always reminds me that when we are thinking about the night sky, we are also aware of ourselves as being earthbound. So these images, for me, are, I think, the artist's effort to connect the earth with the heavens through this beautiful gradation of colour, capturing it at that moment of the day where that distinction somehow blurs.
The Thomas Roof work, which is a very large photograph indeed, combines negatives made in the 1970s in order to map photographically the southern sky. The photographs themselves were actually made from an observatory in the Andes in Chile. So Roof has taken those negatives, made this very large print of the starlit sky from them, and then added his own star without exactly telling us where or even how.
So you don't know which one?
We don't know which little sparkle of light is his, as opposed to, you might say, God's. What's interesting is, again, about how this kind of work on the part of an artist both adopts scientific imagery but also calls it into question, perhaps even calls into question whether this thing can any longer be called a photograph. Perhaps it's better called a painting or some other kind of hybrid image form. But it's a fascinating image and easily the largest in the show. The work that in a way initiated this exhibition was a series of photographs made by a German photographer, Hermann Kroner, in 1874 as part of the German expedition sent out to the Auckland Islands off the southern coast of New Zealand in order to record the 1874 transit of Venus. Eight of them were sent out here and they made a camp at Terra Cove using buildings that they'd bought in Melbourne in Australia. While they waited for the transit to occur, Kroner discovered that there was very little fresh, clean water on this island, so he invented a new photographic process that he called the Auckland Dry Process that required only one wash with clean water. So here we have an example of an entirely distinctive photographic process invented here in New Zealand, and then he used this process first to record the landscape of the island itself, and then subsequently the actual transit. In 1909, in Dresden, there was a very large international exhibition devoted to photography, and even though he was then an elderly man, Kroner was invited to mount an exhibition on the history of photography itself using his own collection. And three of the 100-odd panels that he put together feature these photographs that he made here in New Zealand. So this is the first opportunity since 1874 for these photographs to be shown back where they were made here in New Zealand. So we're particularly proud that the Goethe Institute was able to help support the loan or the borrowing of these particular photographs. Only two paper prints of the photographs he made of that transit have survived because all of the original glass plates were destroyed during the Allied bombing campaigns over Dresden. One of those prints is in Melbourne and one of them is here on this panel. And what we see is a single white dot over a larger dark orb of the sun, all of it gridded up for scientific measurement purposes. Near the Kroner photographs, we have a case with some books. And in one of those books, we see a circular graphic image. And what we're looking at is a depiction of a daguerreotype that was exposed also in 1874, but in Japan. This was made by a French expedition who similarly were wanting to record the transit, but they chose to use the daguerreotype process. Even though daguerreotype had been extinct for 20 years at this point, they thought that because it was a dry process, it was less likely to shrink, and that therefore any measurements of the daguerreotype photographs would be more accurate than if you used a wet plate process, for example. In order to expose those daguerreotype plates, Janssen, the leader of the expedition, invented a photographic gun so that he could turn the circular plates like a clock through, say, 70 different exposures in a continual process. A man named Marie in France got wind of this new invention, got the specifications for it, made a quicker version, and that was the origins of the cine camera, and thus the origins of the movie industry that now supports so much of Wellington. So what we see here in the transit is not only the origins of New Zealand as a nation state, but also the origins of the movie industry.
We don't only have photographs in the show. In fact, there are two paintings, one being made by Simon Ingram, which is a new commission, which I'm sure we'll talk about in due course. The other is a work from the early 1970s by Colin McCann called Venus and Reentry. And here I am convinced that McCann would have been following closely what was happening in terms of the space race at the time, being deeply concerned about the geopolitics of the era. This was informing his approach to depicting his own local landscape. He was very burdened by the threat of nuclear war, of the Cold War, and the culmination of this in the space race obviously captured his imagination. So here we have an artist who's making a painting, but it's deeply informed by the kind of imagery that would have been around him in newspapers, on television, in magazines, and so on.
We were quite keen to include contemporary artists and indeed to commission new work, especially for the exhibition. And Tina knew of the work of Simon Ingram and thought he would be an excellent addition.
Hello, I'm Simon Ingram, an Auckland-based artist who has installed this work for our dark sky. The work has two elements to it, a large parabolic dish on the roof and a machine that paints what the dish is receiving. The large object on the roof is a parabolic dish that's receiving a particular frequency that radio astronomers seek to observe in order to understand more about the origins of the universe and the nature of matter. And the particular frequency in this case is 1420 megahertz, which is the frequency of atomic hydrogen, which is the most common element in the universe. So I've chosen this frequency and built this dish and used off-the-shelf electronics to capture this series of spectral emissions from atomic hydrogen. And I'm now seeking to, by having installed a machine in the gallery, make a kind of aggregation of information related to that frequency over a period of the duration of the show. And the outcome of the painting will be a black monochrome whose composition is characterized by various kind of concentric circles and concentric squares and radiating lines.
In this instance, rather than dealing with photography, which uses light as its medium, Simon is using this sound, this wave that has another relationship to outer space. But what I love about what will result is that it will be as if the sky is painting a portrait of itself. And ironically, what will result is a totally black, blank surface. So the irony for me is that as much as Simon has employed this rigorous science to deliver this interesting information, we will actually know very little as a result. It will be a certain kind of blank.
Okay, we're now standing in the Kirk Gallery, and we've got a selection of works by Eric Lee Johnson, who many listeners would know as an important mid-20th century New Zealand artist, known for his characteristic paintings and drawings of a distinctive New Zealand landscape, but perhaps not so well known as an experimental photographer who had a fascination for capturing the night sky. We've been very fortunate in being able to borrow a number of these works from the collections of Te Papa, and what we have here, some fascinating explorations of the night sky, exploiting the characteristics of the camera using time delay and a kind of montage process to create these beautiful star drawings.
Some of these photographs by Lee Johnson are in fact montages, so he would twirl a torch in the air, for example, in a spiral kind of shape, and then use that negative to overlay over some of his other shots of the night sky so that we get these kind of strangely artistic combinations. But perhaps the two most powerful images in a way are the two of the simplest that are on display. In 1957, the Soviets sent Sputnik, the first spacecraft, to circle over our planet. And for 3 months, it was visible in the night sky here in New Zealand. And Lee Johnson was very keen to photograph it, in fact, to try and sell it to Life magazine, the first picture of Sputnik. Unfortunately, somebody got there before him, but nevertheless, he did make a number of photographs of it. And so here we see again this single line going through the sky, but a line that is so loaded with geopolitical significance. This is the first time the Cold War, if you like, left the planet Earth and manifested itself in the sky. And of course, it was an incredible triumph for the Soviet propaganda machine to have this thing going overhead. But also, I think it reminded everybody in New Zealand all of a sudden that they were part of this much larger geopolitical struggle, because even here in our little island, we could see this Soviet spacecraft going overhead. I think it's one of the sub-themes of the exhibition is that even though we're here in this particular nation state formed as a consequence of the viewing of the transit of Venus in 1769, in fact, the skies don't obey any national boundaries, that we are all part of a, not only just a global struggle for existence, but we are all part of a bigger universe, and this show is all about that universe.
That was Victoria University art historian Geoffrey Batchen. And before that, you heard Adam Art Gallery director Tina Barton.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this, you can find more stories on our webpage, radionz.co.nz/ourchangingworld. Ka kite anō.